Main Episode 2, Ardashir the First. In the early morning hours of the 28th of April, 224 CE, two armies arrayed facing each other in Hormozgan, a flat plain region tucked amidst the Zagros Mountains. On one side, the Shahanshah, the King of Kings, the Arsacid Emperor, Ardavan the Fourth, sat on his horse at the head of the imperial army, aiming to crush the biggest rebellion against his rule, actually the biggest rebellion against the entire five centuries of Arsacid rule in Iranshahr. On the other side, an upstart, a political neophyte whom no one had heard of just a couple of years prior, Ardashir, the reigning Shah of Pars, had his eye on Ardavan's crown and the title of Shahanshah. The battle, which was primarily a cavalry engagement, lasted all day. In the evening, Ardavan and his command structure lay dead on the field. The Arsacid dynasty was no more. Ardashir was now the undisputed strongman and the ruler of Iranshahr, and the crown passed on to a new family, the family of Sasan. Who was Ardashir? Where did he come from? And how is it that he was able to unseat one of the two most powerful men in the world? There are precise stories about Ardashir's background, childhood, parentage, and his rise to power. All of these stories are wrong. No one really knows for sure where the family of Sasan came from, and whether Sasan, whose name adorns the dynasty, ever existed, or even was a human being. So I'm going to start with the well-known histories in this area, and through both this episode and follow-on in-depth episodes, untangle the stories and figure out what parts can be considered as having a legitimate claim to the truth, and what parts should be studied as historical fiction only. The best-known early history of the Sasanian rule comes from the early Islamic historian Abu Ja'far Muhammad ibn Jarir al-Tabari. Fortunately for us, he generally is referred to just as al-Tabari, who lived from 838 to 923 CE. Volume 5 of his 40-volume work, The History of the Prophets and Kings, recounts the story of the Sasanians. I just want to briefly point out that al-Tabari wrote his account of life and rise of Ardashir close to 650 years after those events. Al-Tabari, needless to say, should be taken with a grain of salt. Though no one claims to know the date of Ardashir's birth, several sources seem to agree that he was born in the district of Istakhr, although not clear whether he was born within the city itself or in one of the surrounding villages. Al-Tabari tells us that Ardashir's grandfather, the eponymous Sasan, was a renowned warrior who had risen through the ranks to be the chief priest of the temple of the goddess Anahita, an especially important goddess in the local pantheon in Istakhr, the seat of the kingdom of Pars. This position would put Sasan among the highest ranks of the local nobility. Sasan married a local noble woman, a descendant of Darius III, the last Achaemenid Shahanshah, and they had, I'm sure among many children, a son named Babak. Babak, in turn, had, among several children, two sons, the oldest son being Shapur and the second son, Ardashir. That a descendant of Darius III would have been hanging out in Istakhr after five centuries is historically plausible. When the armies of Alexander the Great were approaching Persepolis in 330 BCE after defeating Darius III's armies, the civilian royal population of Persepolis fled to the nearby Istakhr and sought refuge there. It is not too far-fetched to think that one or more of Darius's children would have been among the refugees. There are, of course, other narratives that Babak was a tailor's son and was adopted by Lord Sasan. That Babak himself was a tailor and married Sasan's daughter, and many other variations. What all of Ardashir's ancestral stories have in common is that a man by the name of Babak existed who had two sons, the older one being Shapur and the younger one Ardashir. We do not know who Babak's ancestors were. At some point, some have put his age at 7, Ardashir is sent to the city of Darabgerd, some 130 miles, as the crow flies, southeast of modern-day Shiraz, to be raised by the castellan or Argbed of the town. The practice of having a lord's child be raised by another lord has many precedents in history. We see this time and again in medieval Europe, where, for example, the future Richard III was raised by the Earl of Warwick, or that Theon Greyjoy of the Iron Islands was raised by Lord Eddard Stark of Winterfell. When Ardashir grows big and strong, no one knows how old he was at that point, the first recorded death of the myriad convenient deaths in his orbit happens. The Argbed dies, and Ardashir, who had been his mini-me since the age of 7, is chosen as the new Argbed. Militarily, this was an important appointment, because as the Argbed of a major military garrison, he had control over a large portion of the men under arms in the kingdom of Pars. In a few years, Ardashir would also add the garrison in the city of Gur under his official command as well. So it is not hard to imagine that while he was at Darabgerd, he already had made alliances with the Argbeds of the nearby garrisons. Therefore, at this point, Ardashir could exercise significant influence over the entire southern forces in Pars. With strong encouragement from Ardashir, his father Babak rose against the ruling Parsi king Gozer in 205 CE. Whether Gozer himself was in rebellion against the Arsacid rule at this time is the subject of some historical disagreements, and its resolution has no bearing on our story. Of relevance is the fact that Babak manages to oust Gozer. Remember that Ardashir at this point was in command of, or at least had major influence over, the armies in southern Pars, so Gozer was fighting with an arm tied behind his back. It appears that the involvement and encouragement of Ardashir was indispensable to Babak gaining the upper hand in this rebellion. News of the coup d'etat in Astahr reached the ears of both claimants to the Arsacid crown, Ardavan IV and his older brother Vologases VI. Both men declined to get involved in what looked like a petty local power struggle, as both men had much bigger fish to fry. They each was trying to oust the other, while at the same time either ally with or fight against, depending on the turn of events, the Roman Emperor Caracalla, who was seeking to expand his domain into Mesopotamia. Marcinus, a Roman general, murdered Caracalla on the eve of the battle with Ardavan, and several days later named himself as the new Roman Emperor. Ardavan managed to defeat Marcinus in Nisibis in 217 CE and made peace with him in 218, and then turned around to face his mean older brother. Meanwhile, back in Astahr, Babak became the king of Pars and named Shapur, his older son, as heir apparent. This angered Ardashir to no end. Ardashir, who had suffered the indignity of being raised in a provincial backwater town, Ardashir, who had connived and cajoled and charmed Argbeds in his area to withhold support from Gozer, Ardashir, who was the instigator of his father's rebellion, this Ardashir was looked over. Well, as Bruce Springsteen sings that Adam raised a Cain, Babak raised an Ardashir. Ardashir invaded Gur from Darabgerd and captured it. Gur was a bigger town and was closer to Astahr, and geographically better situated for the launch of a clean and quick attack on the capital. The ruins of both Darabgerd and Gur are visible today, and I have put some satellite photos from Google Maps on the webpage of this episode. The victory of Ardashir in Gur is memorialized in a small rock relief outside of the city ruins. Then suddenly, unexpectedly, mysteriously, Babak died, the second of the eerily convenient deaths in Ardashir's orbit. As expected, Shapur ascended the Parsi throne. Shapur, Ardashir's older brother. Ardashir launched his attack on Astahr, but the military engagement was soon over because suddenly, unexpectedly, mysteriously, Shapur died. This was the third of the eerily convenient deaths in Ardashir's orbit. Astahr surrendered, and Ardashir was crowned as the new Parsi Shah. Still, Ardavan and Vologases were paying no attention, as they saw this as an intra-family power struggle that did not affect their own much more important affairs having significant international ramifications. The deaths of others in Ardashir's orbit were neither sudden, nor unexpected, nor mysterious. Ardashir went on an overt rampage in Astahr and killed anyone who could challenge his rule, including the rest of his brothers and several of his male cousins. These violent rampages are unfortunately only too common in history. They especially happen when the claim to the throne of the ruler is less legitimate than, or as legitimate as, the claims of others. In that case, those others are killed. Here we have the heirs of Guzer, the children of Babak, and other lords and grandees who think that, well, now that Guzer is gone, why Ardashir and why not me? These people all had to go if Ardashir were to feel safe and see his flanks protected. Once Astahr was secure, Ardashir took his show on the road. Where he went is quite clear. He went everywhere. But in what order he visited the various nearby kingdoms and killed their people is the subject of a great deal of controversy. We know that he secured the nearby kingdoms of Kerman and Sakastan to the east, and Elam and Mead to the west and north. It is at this point, near the end of the year 223, that Ardavan woke up one day and realized his empire was now divided in thirds. He ruled one third, that miserable wretch of a brother Vologases ruled another third, and now this upstart, this nobody, this Parsi peasant, Ardashir, ruled the other third. Ardashir could no longer be ignored. And it was then that Ardavan invited Ardashir to battle on the plains of Hormozgan on that fateful day in April in 224 CE. Ardavan had every right to be confident. He had decisively defeated the Roman Emperor Caracalla and Marcinus. He had managed to neutralize his brother's influence in the empire, and his own was increasing. This little upstart from the backwaters of Pars with his ragtag army was not going to be a big match for the imperial forces of the Arsacid Shahanshah. Or so Ardavan thought. We know what happens at the battle. Ardashir is victorious and Ardavan loses his head. One other important point, and I'm pretty comfortable to call it a historical fact, as there is contemporaneous evidence for it, is that Shapur, Ardashir's oldest son, participated in the Battle of Hormozgan. Now, just a clarification here, that both Ardashir's older brother and Ardashir's oldest son were named Shapur. So this Shapur here is Ardashir's son, as Ardashir's brother Shapur had been killed or had died a few years ago. Tabari says that Shapur, son of Ardashir, charged first and killed Ardavan, second in command. And then Ardashir charged and ended up killing Ardavan. Whether Shapur played such a significant role in the battle is not known. But given Shapur's role in Ardashir's administration, as we shall see in the next episode on Shapur's life, one could comfortably conclude that Shapur played a major role in Hormozgan as well. Now, if this were a podcast about the Roman or Byzantine empires, then I would go into the arrangement of the forces during the battle and who moved first and who attacked whom and so on and so forth. I think at this point, I've told you all that anyone knows about this battle. For example, no one knows where the plain of Hormozgan was. The problem is that the early Islamic historians whose records are now used to locate these historical places used Hormozgan only to refer to the location of the battle and used the area's contemporaneous name for other purposes and never cross-referenced it, as in they never said Hormozgan, which today is called Yara Yara. The most popular guess for the location of Hormozgan is the relatively large plain within the Zagros Mountains by the town of Ram Hormuz, some 60 miles as the crow flies east of the modern-day Ahvaz, the capital of the Khuzestan province. The two locations share the name Hormuz. Ram Hormuz means made peaceful by Hormuz, and Hormozgan means belonging to Hormuz. There are many other reasons, primarily based on the guesses as to the most practical movement of armies from one location to another, that the meeting place around Ram Hormuz would make sense. Of course, other locations, such as west of the current-day Tehran or near current-day Hamadan, and other places have been offered with corroborating historical data to back them up. Flushed with his victory at Hormozgan, his belly full from the loot of Ardavan's camp, and his ranks swelled with the refugees from Ardavan's army, Ardashir headed west and captured Ctesiphon in 226 CE, 2 years after Hormozgan, and drove Vologases forever out of the picture. Well, kind of. Vologas's children will come back to haunt Ardashir's children, but that's for our future episodes. He found Ctesiphon in a dilapidated state and built a new city called Weh Ardashir across the Tigris. Weh in Middle Persian means good. Weh Ardashir means better by Ardashir, meaning that the city that Ardashir built is better than Ctesiphon. A bit of ego. He then marched all the way across the empire to Khorasan and captured the city of Marv, the administrative epicenter of the region. Al-Tabari tells us that Ardashir went all the way to the Oxus River, but modern-day historiography suggests that Marv was as far as he went. At some point during these escapades, Ardashir named himself Shahanshah. Some suggest that following the Battle of Hormozgan, Ardashir was acclaimed as Shahanshah on the field, and all bowed to him as such. This is historically plausible, as there are other examples of acclamation as emperor on the field at the end of a decisive battle, both among the Iranians and among the Romans. Others suggest he was crowned Shahanshah when he captured Ctesiphon, a most important administrative center of the Arsacids. This is also historically plausible, was Ctesiphon was not the end-all and be-all of the Arsacid existence, given that Ardashir had already captured most of the other administrative centers, the capture of Ctesiphon would signify that he had effective control of the empire. And a third group suggests that he was named Shahanshah only after his capture of Marv, the last Arsacid administrative stronghold. This too makes sense, since only at that point does Ardashir become the sole ruler of all Arsacid lands. Between 230 and 232, Ardashir fought the Roman Emperor Severus Alexander to a draw in northern Mesopotamia. Neither army managed to move the borders. Given the infamous loss of Caracalla and Marcinus to Ardavan, a draw was hailed as a huge victory in Rome. Then Ardashir, this genius, type A personality, constantly on the move, restless, ruthless, bloodthirsty, builder of an empire, packed up his saddlebags and went home. He handed the administration of the empire to Shapur and reportedly went back to a life of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or as they used to put it, wine, women, and song. On April 12, 240 CE, he crowned his son Shapur as a co-regent, making Shapur's rule over the empire official. And 2 years later, in 242 CE, Ardashir Babakan, Ardashir, son of Babak, died. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'll be back soon with another main episode on the reign of Shapur, and then follow that up with some in-depth episodes to talk about some details of Ardashir's and Shapur's respective lives and reigns. I would like to thank you for coming along on this journey with me. Please subscribe to this podcast and leave it a rating on whatever podcasting app you use, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or others. Subscriptions and reviews let others find the podcast more easily. This podcast was researched, written, narrated, recorded, edited, engineered, and basically everything else by yours truly, Sam Tomasevi. Please visit us online at sasanianpod.com and on Facebook at the History of Sasanian Podcast Group. We're also on Twitter, where the handle is at sasanianpod, or you can send me an email on sasanianpod@gmail.com or leave a comment on the website. Until next time, تا برنامه آینده سلامتی و کامروایی شما دوستان را آرزومندم.